Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KE Report weekend show. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend's edition. This weekend's show going to be focused more big picture comments for the commodities sector. We're going to start off by talking about the precious metals and the metals broadly, where the next catalyst could come from. And then in the back half of the show, talk energy, oil, and natural gas. A lot of these sectors, or at least gold and oil and even natural gas, kind of range bound over the last little bit. So whether we're in summer trading or whether it's just a pause in the next move higher or lower for any of these commodities, we're going to try to figure out what's on the horizon. Just as a note, please, everyone, go back through our website, kereport.com, and subscribe to our podcast and YouTube channel. Just search The KE Report. That's where you can find all our daily editorials, company updates, and our full weekend show. If you're listening on the radio, you just get more or less isolated segments here. We don't have the full time allotted on the radio to cover all the topics that we do on the weekend show. Let's get into it, kicking off this weekend show with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Now, Jeff, big picture, I asked you off mic, what's been on your radar for commodities or gold in particular? We'll go through four main topics, starting off with the big, beautiful bill. The tax bill went through everything in the U.S. It got passed, and now we're all sitting here wondering just how bad it's going to be, quite honestly, for the deficit and spending in the U.S. Jeff, what caught your eye about this big, beautiful bill?
Well, there's several things. You know, if you start at the top of it all, when the White House did its estimates of what this bill would do to the deficit and debt, they started with this unsupportable axiom. They said, our actions in the Big Beautiful Bill are going to boost real GDP growth in the United States to more than 3% on a sustained basis. And when that happens, that will generate so much more revenue that the deficits will actually decline. And we may even be able to reduce the net debt that the government holds. But if you look at real GDP in the United States, we have not had sustained GDP above 3% since the 50s and 60s, the post-war golden days, glory days of the U.S. economy, right? We had a couple years under Reagan and a couple years under Clinton when it was over 3%. But 3% is not a realistic estimate. Most other people are estimating that real GDP will average like 1.5% to 2.5% over the next several years. And at that level, you're going to see $3 to $5 trillion in it added to deficits over the next 10 years, most of which will be added in the first 3 to 5 years. So you're looking at a big increase in deficits. Another thing we notice is that a lot of the cutbacks in services and everything are scheduled to come in after the 2026 congressional election. So the Republicans in Congress said, if we pass this bill and we start cutting social services, Medicare, Medicaid, SNAP, Social Security, and other things, we don't get reelected. So if we pass this bill now, but we don't start slashing that stuff until after we've been reelected, that's better for us. You know, and that just sort of drives home the self-serving nature of congressional leadership today. You know, it's just really pathetic. So those are two of the big things. Obviously, you know, with the Texas floods, there's a lot of talk about, well, you know, you guys were going to close down the NOAA early warning system. Maybe that's not wise. You were going to close down FEMA. And Trump even said it like Sunday. He said, you know, well, let's wait until after the hurricane season to talk about what we do with FEMA. And so in sum, the big, beautiful bill to me is a mess. It's a negative factor for the economy long term and short term. But the way they're handling it ties in with the way they're handling tariffs and other pieces of economically oriented legislation. It's willy-nilly, it changes from day to day, and it reduces the predictability. So corporations don't really know what, if it's safe to invest in new plants or new hiring or new equipment. And consumers really don't know what to do. So you've seen a plunge in people looking to buy a house because of the uncertainty. You've seen a skyrocketing in the number of people trying to sell their houses because they want to go to liquidity and amidst the uncertainty. So, I look at that bill and I look at it as part of this bigger meshuggah, for want of a better word, that is just driving tremendous risks, uncertainties, and anxieties, not only in the United States economy, but globally.
Well, Jeff, with that backdrop and tying it over into the markets and even into the precious metals, do you think that because there's so much of a focus now on debt from really both sides of the aisle, and the sovereign debt issue has always been a narrative in the gold and silver space, do you think that ties into possibly a weak economic outlook, but possibly a boon for precious metals?
I think in the long run, I mean, right now, what we're seeing yesterday and today is people are concerned about interest rates actually rising in the short term. And you have seen short rates and intermediate term rates in the market rising some because of concerns about the debt issues. But I think in the long run, all of this stuff is economically, it's negative for economic growth, and that is positive for gold and silver.
Jeff, is this all negative US dollar then? With what the US is doing, all the projections that they're making with how much debt this could add, it seems like the US dollar could continue this retracement.
Well, it's funny because, like, and you saw these headlines, the New York Times, of all people, last week, the dollar has fallen lower than it has been since 1973. And that's not true. The dollar is actually sharply higher than it has been for decades, probably since 1973. But what is true is the dollar is off about 10% year to date. And it's now back to levels that it was at the beginning of 2024, late 2023. The dollar's still relatively high. And that reflects this terrible economic reality that if you owe the world enough, you own it. So because treasury interest-bearing assets are considered one of the least risky debt instruments you can invest in. What's happening is there has been a lot of people buying US treasuries. They've also been buying into the US stock market because we do have an economic advantage over many other countries. And there's this thought that somehow or other there will be some economic growth coming out of Trump's policies of bringing jobs home. So that has caused investors around the world to buy dollars. You can't invest in the US stock market unless you have dollars. You can't invest in US treasuries unless you have dollars. So the dollar has actually benefited from the debt crisis that the treasury is the worst sinner in creating. So it's kind of ironic. And you can get a situation as we've had over the last couple of years, where the dollar and gold and silver all rise together because those are the safe havens in times of economic turmoil.
Well, Jeff, another narrative that we hear a lot about is stagflation, and that if GDP does stay at 1.5 to maybe 2%, as you outlined, and if we do see an uptick in inflation, then in real terms, you could still have mild GDP growth, but still being outpaced by inflation. And so we don't know what tariffs are actually going to put on or when they're going to be put on. But if we weave the tariffs into this discussion, is it possible we get into a situation where we see job losses mount? Where unemployment creeps back higher, there's still mild growth in the country, but then it's being outstripped by inflation.
Absolutely. I mean, we've had enormously long period of time with negative real inflation interest rates on US treasuries, really going back to like 2009, 2010. There, a couple blips where real inflation adjusted rates got positive. But basically, we have been living in a world where short-term interest rates have not been competitive with gold. And that's been reflected in the gold price. You know, if you go back to 2019, you know, the gold price was $1,040, $1,100, $1,150, you know, and now it's 3,300 something. Yeah. So I do think that you will continue to see, I wouldn't necessarily call it stagflation, but I do think that you're going to have a period of time where inflation is higher than interest rate, nominal interest rates. And that's going to continue for a while. And it's going to be positive for gold and silver as alternative assets.
Man, we're hearing that stagflation comment thrown around a lot right now, and it does seem like the US is going down that road. But I guess the degree of stagflation and how it filters into markets, that's still up for debate because we've had a number of different commentators saying different things, actually. Jeff, what about investment demand for gold? You focus a lot on investment demand because that really is one of the main price drivers, if not the main price driver for gold. Clearly, there's been some demand there because gold is up around 3,300, but it has mostly trended sideways for the last 2.5 months. So give us some up-to-date stats on what you're seeing in terms of the investment demand for gold.
What we're seeing strong growth in ETFs on a global basis. You know, it's interesting because Chinese ETFs have skyrocketed over the last 2 years or so. They were like 2 million ounces in Chinese ETFs in late 2023, and now there's more than 6 million ounces. So what you're seeing in China is what we're seeing elsewhere as well, is there's a greater interest in having gold price exposure through ETFs. And the United, outside of China, or on a global basis, you know, you've got about 120 million ounces now, 121 million ounces of gold held in ETFs. And that is up, you know, on a year-to-date basis, it's up about 11 million ounces. So you're seeing pretty strong demand for gold ETFs. You're seeing relatively strong demand for futures and options, although that's off some too on a net position basis. I mean, it was up 6.5% in May from April, but it was off the net long position of institutional investors was off 24% from May of 2024. So you're seeing some reduction there, but it's still very high. You're seeing fewer coins being bought by investors, I guess partly because a lot of people who buy coins don't want to pay $3,000 for a coin that, you know, 2 years ago they were paying $1,200 or $2,000 for. So the coin market's relatively weak, but we're seeing relatively strong demand in India, relatively strong demand in China, relatively strong demand in other parts of Southeast Asia. And you're seeing strong demand through the ETFs in Europe and North America. So it's there. And you know, our expectation is that you will continue to see strong investment demand for gold this year. And that I think that we're thinking that it could go up about another 8% from last year. And last year was very high. I mean, we had 45 million ounces that we estimate were net investment demand in physical gold last year, and we're talking about 49 million ounces or maybe even 50 million ounces this year, depending on what happens in the second half of the year.
Well, Jeff, as you also look at the futures market, we were talking off mic that gold is currently on the August contract. Obviously, as we get further into July, that'll come more into the crosshairs. I think silver's already on the September contract, but with gold being on the August contract, are you seeing anything in the open interest? Are you seeing anything as far as how different commercials versus speculators are positioned?
Yeah, right now you've got about 31 million ounces of open interest in the futures market on COMEX for the August contract. And there's about 20 million ounces of registered, and there's another 16 million ounces of eligible but not registered metal. So you've got 36 million ounces of gold that meets COMEX qualities, specifications in COMEX registered depositories. So 31 million ounces probably is not indicative of a problem, but we do think that in the second half of July, which is where we're headed, especially in the last week of July, you'll see a lot of that 31 million ounces roll forward into the October contract, and that could apply some upward pressure on prices. We'll also be watching the deliveries because if you start seeing major bullion banks taking delivery for their own account during the August delivery period, that might suggest it could indicate that they are looking at liquidity issues in the physical gold market in the second half of the year or in the last years of the last month of the year, specifically in late September going into October. There was a historical precedent back in 1999, I believe it was, where you saw one of the bullion banks take a large amount of deliveries in the August contract. And people were saying, why are they doing that? Because if they wanted to buy that much gold, they could easily buy it in the OTC market in a totally anonymous way. And our view was they want everyone to know that they have that gold because they're looking at what we're looking at, which is a potential for liquidity price problems in the physical market in October, November, and December. And they are broadcasting to the market, if it comes to be late September or October and you need gold, we have it. So we're going to be paying attention to seeing who's taking delivery for their own account in the August contract. Because if you see the banks taking delivery of their own account, that suggests to us that they could be looking at and be concerned or interested in seeing a liquidity issue late September or early October. And just to close the circle, back in 1999, the price was trading like $260 an ounce in July and August when they took that delivery. It spiked up to like $340 for one day in early October and then came back off and it was below 300 within a couple weeks.
So these things do or can at least cause some temporary price spikes or even drops, I guess. But Jeff, anything else that you're seeing on these COT reports that show you somebody's out of position or that more people are taking notice or really anything else that's catching your eye for COT reports?
The COT report, yeah, the major thing that I'm seeing is, yeah, on a year-over-year basis, you are seeing this reduction in institutional investor positions. You know, the 14% decline in gross longs from a year ago. Again, up 6% from April, end of April, but down 14%. One of the more interesting things that factors into that negative 23% is if you look at the gross shorts are up 39.5% from where they were a year ago. So as the price of gold has risen, institutional investors, there's been an increase in institutional investors who are saying, okay, I'm willing to go short here because maybe the price is approaching a peak. And even if it isn't a secular peak, there could be a downdraft as there was in the stock market in the first 5 months, 4 months of this year, you know, only to see it come back and make new highs. So you're seeing institutional investors who play the futures market saying, you know, as the price has gotten higher and higher, and it's sort of been moving sideways now since April, there's a potential that we could see a spike down in gold prices at some point. And there is.
Well, Jeff, if we widen the scope out beyond just the US financials and politics and look at the rest of the globe, you've mentioned a little bit about China, but we were also talking off mic that the BRICS are getting ready to meet in Brazil. And so far, there hasn't been any indication that they're going to create a gold-backed currency, but you know what happens every time they meet? That's the kind of narratives that come out of the woodwork. Do you think there could be any wild cards, or is there any positioning in some of the BRICS nations that you want to note here for listeners?
Well, one of the more interesting things is that Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, neither of them are coming to this year's summit. And, you know, Putin has a deep-seated fear of traveling abroad right now because he thinks that the International Court of Justice or whatever would grab him in some country. But Xi Jinping is not going this year either. If you look at the agenda, what the BRICS group of countries have said is they want to focus on reforming the IMF and the World Trade Organization this year. Last year, when they met in Russia, one of their big points was that they weren't looking to compete with the existing international financial institutions. They were looking to reform them. And they hoped for and were striving to help create a more equitable international financial system centered on the IMF. Those were their words, you know. And this year, what they're saying is they want to start sketching out what they think would be a more equitable IMF and World Trade Organization set of rules and regulations. So that's what one of the big things that they're talking about. The other thing they want to talk about is strengthening climate finance, financing for clean climate technology across the economy. So those are the two things they're talking about. They haven't really, from what we could tell, they haven't really created a formal agenda yet, or at least we didn't see it posted on their website. But other people related to them have posted agendas and topics. And again, there's no word about gold in any of it, and there's no word about a BRICS currency. So I think that that's what you're going to see in the BRICS. But yeah, as you said, that won't stop gold promoters from saying, oh, the BRICS is going to surprise everyone and come out with a gold-backed currency. And it would be a surprise, and it would be a surprise to all of the BRICS members if they did that. But its probability is probably less than 10%. So we don't expect that to be something that could surprise the gold market to the upside.
Oh, it's always a fun story to talk about, though. Hey, Jeff, what a different world it would be in if we did have a gold-backed currency anywhere in the world, let alone if the BRICS went there. But yeah, I feel like we talk about this every year, almost every quarter. Let's just take a, I guess, summary of everything that's happening here. That there are just a ton of catalysts behind gold. It's what has supported this much higher gold price. And it's not just one thing. It seems to be a confluence of factors that have continued to drive gold higher. But as I said earlier, we're about 2.5 months here of a relatively range-bound gold price, pretty much at all-time highs, but it has been range-bound. So what's coming? Where's the next catalyst? We're asking a lot of people this, but outside of the current narratives and the current drivers, where's the catalyst to either drive gold higher or lower?
Yeah, you know, I think the possibility is for gold prices to come a little bit lower over the next month or two. You know, you've got some seasonal weakness in investment demand, investors go on vacation, and in fabrication demand. And that could see the gold price weaken a little bit. You know, we're not quite sure how low it would go. But yeah, as you said, it's at record levels. People are complaining that the gold price is so low. It's at record levels. It started the year at $2,660, and it's $3,350 today. You know, that's a really big increase already. In terms of catalysts to move the prices higher, we have a whole litany. And as you said, and we've been saying for 26 years now, it's a whole list of economic and political and social trends that are negative for people and negative for economic growth and negative for capital formation that are coming together and creating this ill ease on the part of corporations, institutional investors, and individuals. And that is helping them fuel their interest in gold and in silver as alternative assets. And one of the things that's so disheartening and concerning is the massive growth in money supply, not just in the United States, but on a global basis. And it's like, you know, the dollar is strong because the dollar, there's so, we're pumping up so many dollars, people are worried about the economy. It's the same thing with gold. You see this massive increase in money supply, people get worried about that. And because there's this massive increase in money supply, they have more money to buy gold with. So it helps fuel the solution that to the problem that is it. Yeah. And I think that that's going to be there. But you have a whole list of things that could happen. There could be something in the South China Sea or the Straits of Taiwan. That's kind of lower level type of stuff. We're a little bit worried about North Korea because when North Korea isn't in the spotlight, when it's neglected, it tends to do some saber rattling for attention. Obviously, the big one is Ukraine and Russia. The United States administration, despite what the government of the United States has said, the administration has been holding back on weapons. Ukraine could get the upper hand if the U.S. would just get out of its way, but the U.S. government has refused to get out of its way. It's hard to say what's going to happen. We're hearing a lot of concerns about domestic issues within Russia, and you had another rear admiral killed actually by a missile from Ukraine in Kursk last week. You also had another minister who was fired, who then committed suicide. And you're hearing stories of economic and food security rising in Moscow as well as in other parts of the country. So we're watching Russia because, there seems to be growing dissent within Russia, and that could play either way. It could play into Russia not doing as well with the Ukraine war, or Russia trying to do something very desperate to bring the war to a conclusion and using much worse weapons than it has already. So we're watching that. And then you've got the whole tinderbox of the Middle East, which has been extremely unsettled. And we have no idea what Netanyahu and Trump agreed to yesterday in Washington. So there's a lot of stuff to keep us up at night.
Yeah, the world kind of seems like a mess, Jeff. Even when you consider what the US is doing too, and this week that was dominated by tariff news, and now we just need to wait again. It's kind of crazy out there, but hey, that's probably why we see precious metals doing so well, but it's also in the backdrop of markets in the US and globally doing very well. So, what a weird and strange world we live in. We are out of time here though, Jeff. So, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. Again, Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back, shifting our focus over to the energy sector.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.